Hello, my name is Eric Weinstein of 69 Whiskey. This podcast contains mature content and covers topics and subject matters that people may find offensive. The purpose of this show is to attempt to educate people on different viewpoints and topics that are not generally discussed. This community is based on inclusivity and understanding. As host, I do not condone kink shaming, offensive terminology, or exclusion. If there is anything in this show that offends you due to our own ignorance, we apologize and will try to continue to educate ourselves and do better in the future. Have fun, be safe, and enjoy the episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are no longer bound by your radio. This is the 69 Whiskey Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the 69 Whiskey Podcast. I am one of your hosts, the Dollar Store Dom, Eric motherfucking Weinstein, and I am joined by my co-host this time because he finally decided to show up.
Did somebody say titties?
I'm back, bitches!
Let's go. It is the head advocate of the Big Titty Committee, Motorboat. Matt Mish, and I absolutely hate the fact that I missed last week's episode. I sincerely apologize to every single one of our fans listening to this podcast. I'll make sure it probably never happens again.
And with this lovely week coming to a start or close, whatever you want to call it, as far as we're recording, it's a Tuesday. Fuck you. We are joined by somebody from a podcast with a name that speaks very, very dearly to my heart. Miss C.A. Knubel of the Ho on the Go podcast. How are you doing tonight, ma'am?
It's a great day to be a hoe, fellas.
That is a great fucking answer. That is a great fucking answer right there.
Thank you.
So as a fellow hoe myself, I must ask, Why the title? I do have to ask.
Well, because there is negative connotation behind being a hoe. Because people don't know the difference between a hoe, a whore, and a slut. Probably the biggest problem in our society. Top tier.
So, going off of that, please tell us the difference between a hoe, a whore, and a slut. Because I think a lot of people use that interchangeably, thinking it means the same thing, but apparently it doesn't. So please enlighten the listeners here.
Absolutely. So we'll start with sluts. They are the ones that are just in it for the love of the game. They're messing with anyone, anywhere, anytime. They do not care. It's fun. Just make sure you get tested before you start messing with sluts. They're the ones that you're walking out the bar with at the end of the night. You have your whores. Whores are in it for compensation of some kind. $40, their hair and nails done, you're taking them to dinner. Some kind of compensation is given in return for how to play with them. Then you have your hoes. Tier. They always have a hair tie around their wrist. The hoes are ready to suck dick at any time. But not for any reason. You mess with a hoe, we have a roster. These are select people that we mess with, and they're usually NDA signed, involved contracts, all of that fun stuff. There's a lot of extenuating things that go on when you deal with a hoe. Fuck a hoe.
I agree with that sentiment. Going off of the hoe aspect, because I do agree that hoes are the best kinds of human beings because they can flop between whether or not they want monetary compensation or whatever compensation you're actively looking for. A ride somewhere. Maybe a cheeseburger.
That's a whore.
I
don't take compensation.
Important. Okay.
Damn, you just got schooled. You just got straight up schooled just now.
Okay.
Be educated, though, because now he can spread that education to somebody else. Like an STD that you actually do want.
I can make so many jokes off that, but I think I've roasted him enough for things of that nature.
Yeah, I make bad decisions with cocktail waitresses.
Very bad decisions.
Yeah. So, going off of that kind of stuff, I do want to talk to you real quick about, like, your history of being a hoe, because Recently on your podcast and some of your live content, you did like a rundown of how your experiences with military men have been. And I took a little offense to what you said about the army guys, because even though I have to agree with you 110%, for me, like, it's painful because I'm one of like the unicorns from that group. I'm into the kink scene. I'm a very good lover, and I've made a very long history and like career around that. But you outed the army guys. Come on.
Hold on. Now, when I say what I say about the military men, just understand it is not just my personal experience. Do the legwork so people don't have to, but that just means I've done the research. I've researched these things. That means I've researched other people who've been in the situation. It's not just me like, all right, I'm Barrack Bunnying it up, and now I'm telling you guys what I experienced. No, it's my experiences and other people's experiences all combined in one. And my sister happened to be married to somebody who was in the army.
So for someone that's kind of out of the loop about this, because maybe I didn't hear that particular episode or that part of an episode, could you please tell me what you said that hurt him so bad?
Their stroke game is trash. They're not really into kink play. I have to check my notes, honestly, because I was looking at my handbook
That was spot on. Spot on.
I figured those were
two pump chump, no kink game. Fantastic. Fantastic at going down in providing oral services, but short of that, army guys are not great. So I will concede, because as far as like the military stuff goes, we've actually had conversations about this. We used to have to like submit, what are your weekend plans? Blah, 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 blah. And I used to be the jackass who would go, yeah, I'm going to a BDSM sex dungeon. And so like all of like the other soldiers were like, what the fuck is wrong with Weinstein? And I'm like, no, this is completely normal. There's other service people there. I swear.
I used to spend a lot of time at a sex club, actually. I used to teach classes on how to better please your partner. So, honestly, when I started going there, it was just because you could bring your own alcohol inside. Just go and get lit.
Wow.
You can't take your phone inside. They made you leave your phone at the front. They're completely private, everything in there.
What were your experiences at that kind of club? Because the primary club that I would go to would be at somebody's house, and they would not allow alcohol.
Oh, no, this was an actual venue. Like an actual looked like a bar. You kind of walked in and you went through metal detector. It's where they took your phone. You had to have a membership. So I think the first Friday of every month was like $20. It was usually a theme night. And then when you walk into the left, be like a dungeon area where they have like the place for you to self up. They'd have the, you know, St. James cross, the pews, all the kinkery stuff in there. Then there's like two rooms. There's like a swing in one. Maybe both had a swing, I don't remember. And there's a giant dance floor, and there's like a back area with stripper poles and another bar. And then there were 40 rooms to the right that you could go into, and each was like a different theme. And then there was like a shower area, and then a middle area where people just like mats on the floor.
Where was this at?
Yeah, where was this? It sounds like you know what it sounds like before you answer it? It sounds like the place that we were talking about during our Exotica episode, but it might not be, but it sounds like it is.
Just looking into Exotica, because I have a friend who does demonstrations, but it's actually, I'm in Philadelphia, PA. There's a place in Philadelphia on Passyunk Ave.
Yeah, we're not far. I'm Suffern, New York / Toms River, New Jersey, so that's my usual stomping grounds of play areas that I go to.
I'll send you the address then, because it's a great time.
Absolutely. I also suggest going to Test Fest over in, I can't say where it's at, but I will definitely send you the information to get involved in that kind of event. because that was fantastic. 3 days at an entire hotel rented out full of kinksters. Oh, it was awesome.
It's a mess. I usually go squad deep for those kind of things. Like, I go 5-6 people deep. Just have, like, a great time. But I also don't go there for play. I go there to either educate or to just look, watch, learn. Write in my little ho handbook.
So with the kink events, you're doing a lot of observing and you're not really participating?
I want to, I do, but it's really rare, to be honest. I'm not really big into exhibitionism for myself. I'm very traumatized. So for me, I'm very private with that kind of thing. And then I usually just go to literally people watch, because I don't just to be like, ooh, you know, I watch to see like, how do people behave before? How do people behave during? How do people behave after? How do people in relationships react? How do they act when they're single? I literally study human behavior while I'm at these places, just for myself to better educate other people and more fine-tune what I teach people already. How to better please each other. Not be with wet sock energy.
Understood.
So I have a question here, and that it's really simple. I mean, like, because how did you even get into like kink and BDSM and that scene? Because you seem like you're so knowledgeable on it, and I would like to know like how you at least started, if you can talk about that.
I have no filter. I don't care. I actually started because I guess the technical term would be a sugar baby, but I wasn't. There was no sugar involved. I really just went to business meetings with people. Sociable person, and to be attracted to my tits, let's be real, I'm kidding. Now, the way that I talk and bring people in, it was easy for them to nail down business dinners and these arrangements when you had someone like me on your side who is constantly beeping up people around you. So, doing that, I met somebody who became one of my best friends. He actually happened to be a dominant. Until that point, I really didn't know much about anything. Then, you know, watching from porn and learning from porn just to try to learn something, or just Google itself, because, you know, Google was created after I was mostly to adulthood. So, like, my little sister reminds me all the time I'm older than Google, is what I'm trying to say. So, from what I learned from Google, and then obviously he showed me the rest of the way. He took me for the first time to that, you know, venue. He was the one who had submissives, and just watching how facial expressions changed and how they behaved around him without him saying anything. Wow, this is amazing. How do I do that? Because I need to manipulate people better. I'm kidding. But, you know, just in doing that, it was like, wow, this is interesting. And that's when I really dove into it, just really hit the books and just watching people and learning from their behaviors.
So you mentioned that you watched a lot of porn on the subject. Personally, for me, from what I've seen anyway, I think depending on the company or the channels you're watching, I don't really think I get a whole lot out of porn in terms of like understanding the dynamics within a BDSM scene. Cause obviously, at least to me, a lot of it feels staged to give the appeal that it's like that. However, and this is not for all of them, but some of them that I've seen give that feel. However, at Exotica, I had the pleasure of witnessing an actual BDSM negotiation and demonstration. And I feel as though I learned a lot just in that like 15, 20 minutes. And I know that we did a show on this prior to Eric, but I feel like compared to that show, I feel like I learned a whole lot more actually seeing it before my eyes. And it helped me anyway understand like what goes into a dominant submissive relationship, how they interact with each other, especially around other people, because there was a whole bunch of people actually watching the demonstration. So it was definitely, it gave me anyway, a great insight.
Best way to learn. For me, when I just want to interject with that porn thing real quick. Watch those things. It's not to learn the dynamics. You can learn anywhere else. Watch the porn for what the show. The teasing, the sensuality, the seduction portion of it, because it is fake. It's literally like watching a movie, and they sell it. Well, some of them are B-rated. we gotta be honest with ourselves. Some of them acting skills need to be tuned up, even for porn. But, you know, watching when they have these BDSM-style porn videos, it's all about the display. Really all sex is, to be honest, is just present it. Be absolute trash in the bedroom. But if you know how to seduce and you know how to tease, you're still known as a god, so.
That is a fantastic way of describing it, because that is honestly one of the reasons why I do love BDSM the way that I love it, is because to me it is the combination of sensory overloading of somebody. You're taking, yes, you, there is an impact play, the pain that you are inflicting by hitting somebody, but it's also the way that you are moving, the way you are creating the anticipation of the hit. It is the way that you are talking to them, touching them, feeling them. There is always going to be those lines of intimacy, but there's also the lines of sight, the lines of sound. There's so much that goes into it, and it's why I love piecing that kind of stuff together. And on that kind of showmanshipy kind of let's plug things and do nice stuff, Christine, you've got a show coming up, like a live show that you are hosting, which I hear there is a 2-drink minimum for. But how's that planning that out going? How's doing all of that going?
I have a ho-ho-ho holiday show coming up. And I do event coordination and project coordination every day, all day. I've done it for years. I'm a Virgo. Planning things is kind of my forte. So it came to one nailing down a venue. I want it all female-led. The venue that I am doing it at is called The Fire, and it's actually My Chemical Romance. Just shout out them out at Susquehanna Bank Center, because I got the start there. It's had Maroon 5, OK Go, John Legend, just some people on the stage, and I'm like, and I'm going to be dressed like a slut in Santa suit telling jokes. As far as planning it, kind of just falling into place on its own. I set up vendors to come out, and I did it free with the 2-drink minimum. Number one, comes to comedy, once you start charging, you got to start paying. And that's not really what I wanted to go for. I didn't want it to be about the money. I wanted it to be about, number one, the venue. Number two, me, hello. And number three, just comedy in general. December is hard for everybody. Seasonal depression is going to be extremely difficult this year for most of us. Just because of the way finances are going for everybody after the pandemic and coronavirus and all that fun stuff. Some people are still trying to pick up pieces, but so all this has been for mainstream now, so everybody's depressed, basically. But I wanted something to bring joy. That's basically what I did it for. I'm hoping to turn it every month show. But I don't like to count chickens before they hatch, because I'm also working on 7 million other projects. So still I have respect for myself, for my sleep schedule. So.
And just because I missed it a little bit, where was this going to be taking place?
It's in Philadelphia, where I'm from. It's a venue called The Fire, Girard Ave.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Philadelphia, yeah.
And you've been a comedian for a while, I believe. If I've read into you a little bit. And how long have you been a comedian for?
Acted a straight fool my entire life, but on stage, I've been doing comedy for almost 3 years now.
Okay. And would you consider? Well, would you think that your experiences in sexuality? Do you think that makes for good comedic pieces? I'm just curious, because I know there's different kinds of comedic styles, whether it's dirty or clean comedy. I'm curious to know, like, you know, how much of it, of your experiences, especially in sexuality, do you bring into your stand-up bit?
A lot of it. Actually, I haven't even gotten to touch any of my comedy that has nothing to do with sex. Just because my Ho Handbook that I actually wrote, it is a book, but I also turned it into a 45-minute comedy set. And I haven't even gotten to do the full 45 minutes yet. So basically until then, or until June when I relaunch my book, I'm just going to tell them dick sucking jokes. People are still going to love it. So other than that, I mean, I have I'm the youngest of three girls. We were all 15 months apart. So there's plenty of stories there. I'm mentally ill, so I've got that going for me too. There's plenty of jokes there, you know? And eventually, now that I've kind of gone over my trauma and things that happened there, I can start making jokes about that too eventually. Kind of controversial. From this thing, it's kind of like dirty or clean comedy. Most comedians who are skilled can do both, by the way. You have to have both bits, because if I go, for example, to a venue where I'm booked for time and there's a bunch of woo girls outside and they're all drunk and I'm ready to tell like the nastiest jokes I've got, and then, you know, three old ladies walk in, I'm going to pump the brakes. I'm going to try to pull up that a little bit instead of choking on dick on a Saturday night, you know?
Yeah, yeah, those little old ladies don't tend to usually like those dick-sucking jokes. There are a couple!
When it comes to the older crowd, it is a hit or a miss when it comes to dirty jokes. Usually, it depends on the setting. So if you have little old ladies, and there's like a gaggle of them, they okay. They're there with their husbands, then no. Don't even do it. Don't do it. Just stray away, talk about marriage or something, and just pull out other jokes. Because once you start talking about sexuality with them when they're with their husbands, they try to be more, you know, demure and tame, and they won't laugh at it, and it just won't hit.
Do they make for good crowd work, though? Like, do you ever, like, go and point them out in the audience and, like, start interacting with them a little bit?
I don't know if it's, like, a respect thing for me or what. But, like, younger married couples? Oh, absolutely. I dog them. I had one time where I was doing it, and it was just an open mic, but it was at a bar, and there was a guy and his wife sitting there having dinner, you know, and, sir, if I asked you when the last time you got great head from your wife was, when was, this man had the audacity to pause. This man, every opportunity to beef his wife up in front of everybody, and he paused, and I'm going, my man! Doing, you know, and now everybody's clowning them because you hesitated, you know. Yeah, you're definitely not getting anything tonight. So it's little things like that. I prefer to dog the younger crowd because they tend to take it better. Or if that was an older crowd, they would get a little bit worse. And I don't apologize. So
yeah. So I do want to ask you, because there are, I am really the only one who has experience dealing with, dating, and sleeping with military here, usually. So, I gotta ask, what is one of your most entertaining stories going out with a military guy?
Oh, yeah, okay. I didn't actually go out. I had a party at my house. You hear me?
Okay.
I'm in summer, baby, so it was popping. There's like, I put out pong tables out back, and how it was packed body to body. I don't know how it happened. Like, I came outside, there were some people there, the sun went down, and it was just packed. So the players come out and go, if you don't know me, time to go, because I don't know you, and I don't know this many people at all. So, regardless, I had a buddy who is a Marine, and Marines tend to have these really big egos. Who do I? And he happened to be also a narcissist and a Leo. You know, regardless, it was just not. And we had this like competition where, because obviously I sleep with women too, I was going to bag more bitches, or at least talk to more than he, because I had a better shot at getting them than he did in my case, which is still factual. And he was very no, whatever. And I watched him go to this girl and was going hard for her. Drinks, kept trying to, you know, dog tags are out, you know. I get that so tacky when people do that. Like, military guys, if you are listening, stop doing it. First of all, we can spot the outline of your dog tags if we're military men. You don't have to pull them out. We will know. Okay. It's magnet to a hoe. Pull out the like dog tags, like really beefing her up, and I'm watching from the sideline with my drink going, this is gonna be good. And the way that this tiny girl, who, I mean, to him, to his standards, to the girls that he, are normally gorgeous women, you know, a bad-looking guy, he's bald, but, you know, he wasn't a bad-looking guy. He was, like, not on the same level as the girls that he usually bags. And this girl shut him down so hard in front of everybody. I really reveled in it the rest of the night. Like, I even made a Facebook post about it, and I don't usually do that. You know, I had to, like, say something. I was like, I felt good, and I didn't even shut him down. But I did not approach her after. I was like, I'm not taking that risk. You ain't shutting me down at my party, honey, because I'm drunk.
So needless to say, he didn't keep trying after that, did he?
Oh God, no, he was wounded. He definitely tailed me away. I don't even think talked to anybody after that. He just kinda like sat in depression in the corner while everybody else was getting lit.
He sat in the corner and ate his crayons. That's what he did.
That was great. Yes, he did. Yeah, that was I love watching egotistical men get shut down. I love it. It's like a fetish almost.
It is very, very entertaining. I will absolutely admit that. I've had a couple of scenarios like that in my time. So we've had a conversation about a girl who at a party basically wanted to do the whole, I'll sleep with both of you guys and you guys can I'll say who was the better lay. And the funny part was he ended up dating her after the fact. And I turned around like 3 or 4 months later and went, so, who won the bet?
First of all, you've told that story a couple of times. You never said that part. Ever.
Yep. I've been saving that part for a while.
You've been holding out on me, you son of a bitch. Anyway. So
listen, we've never had an actual Joho on this show.
That, you know what? Holy shit, you're right. I just now realized that. Oh fuck.
So I'm very happy. I'm with my people now.
Oh man.
Family. But not so, family like taboo stuff, just like regular standard family.
So yeah. I just now realized you are essentially a 69 whiskey. You are the living embodiment.
She is a 69 what a 69 whiskey is.
That makes me so happy. That makes me so happy. And I mean that respectfully. I mean it totally respectfully. But I wanted to ask you this question because it seems like astrology is very much into how you, I guess for lack of better terms, psychoanalyze an individual and their personality and such. So like how is that like something that like you is the first thing you think about? Like do you even you ask them like what their sign is or you just kind of figure out by how they behave?
I feel energy. Talk about wet sock energy. Sock feel. When you step in something, you got socks on. How's that feel?
Cool. Not great. Not great.
Your entire mood, right?
Yeah.
People have the same effect on me. So it's not necessarily their star signs or celestials or I'm not like pulling out tarot cards out my asshole when I go to the bar. You know what I mean? I'm not doing all that. I don't judge people based on their sign. There are some things that happen to fall into place after I give a personal reading of that. Not to them, but like to myself. It's really just when I walk up to somebody just to see the attitude, the everything. I really Sherlock Holmes the shit out of people. I study people, their behaviors, their body language, the way their eyes move, which direction, the eyebrows, everything. An opinion on somebody. Or, you know, not a roast, but you know, I like to tell people about themselves.
Okay, so now I have to ask. You see us. You see how we behave. I want you to now analyze the two of us based on what you know about us so far.
That's not fair. That's not fair.
I'm genuinely curious. I genuinely am curious because, listen, and I say this, and the reason I'm doing this is more or less for myself, let's be honest, because let's just say I'm trying to get back out there in the dating world. And I'm hoping if I know a little bit more about certain things like this, I can actually have better luck, let's say.
First off, this is not fair to ask her. This is the first time she is meeting you. If we were asking
The RFS crew? The role for seduction crew? That's fine to ask them. They've sat in this Discord channel and watched me roast you over and over and over again, and they could tell you everything that is good that you do wrong.
Yes, but I don't know how knowledgeable they are about this kind of stuff.
Oh, they're knowledgeable.
Well, I didn't know that, but this is like the first time I've actually had a conversation with somebody who is involved in it as heavily as Christiane is here. So that's why I was curious.
But what I will say, to give you some assistance in this, if you would like to actually do some psychoanalytical BSery, he has no goddamn self-confidence.
No, hold on. Don't go there. Because
I'm holding self-confidence. It's just not pouring it out. That's all. He's very reserved with it. That's all. You know?
Thank you. And I would actually be inclined to agree. But don't go with the whole fucking lack of self-confidence thing, because I have come to realize over the last couple of weeks just how much my fucking worth matters. So don't go with the whole, oh, I have no self-confidence bullshit. I had no self-confidence for a while, but now I look at myself in the mirror any day. It's like, okay, it's time for you to get better. We're going to take step by step. We're going to start making you better. We're going to build you, I guess, to steal a fucking line from Joe Biden of all people. We're going to build back better. We're going to make Motorboat and Matt great again, goddammit.
Oh, my God.
I'm just kidding. Sorry, I'm ready to go. No, I'm kidding.
But that's just like the closest thing I can think of. But that's seriously how I have been acting over the course of the last couple of weeks, probably since Exotica, I would say. Because as you know, Eric, we talked about this. I was an animal at Exotica. I was doing shit I never thought I'd do in my life.
Good. Couple of things I want to go over with you, because well, circling back to the questions that we were asking before, what advice do you give for somebody who is in Matt's state of being, I guess?
You mean like getting back out there, so to speak?
Yeah, let's start with that. Let's start with that.
In general, depends on where it's coming from. If you're coming from a long period of hurt that kept you from there, I would say go when you're ready to. You won't have to give yourself pep talks in the mirror. Just go, and people will just walk to you. You'll be radiating that confidence. Bounce back.
I'm still telling you to go to some of those parties.
I agree. I just never able to make it. That's really what it comes down to. I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. I will definitely agree with that. To your point, Christiane, about the whole coming from a place of hurt. Like you, I also have trauma. A lot of, I guess I'll kind of fucking talk about it a little bit. I have a lot of self-hate, let's say. I'm not sure if that's something you've ever dealt with or had yourself. I've had a lot of self-hate for a long time. So I guess that kind of factors into the whole lack of confidence. So I feel as though, for me, if I hate myself, how can I make someone else like me or love me in that case, in terms of romantic? But, and that's how I felt before. Now I'm starting to work on it a whole lot better now.
I think it's your perspective. It's not self-hatred. I think it's more of a self-discovery thing. Discover yourself. How is anybody else going to, are you going to nab anybody else or know what you want in somebody else when you don't even know what you want for yourself? To do with confidence, that's just growth. That changes every year. I change what I want a person every time I change my underwear. You never know. So it just really depends on you. But when it comes to, and this is, it's not just you, it's a lot of people. You have to look in the mirror and say, yes, today, you know, that's a good thing, but you already know those things. You're just reinforcing it. You're trying to convince yourself that you're worthy of love, trying to convince yourself to leave the house. They can actually find it. Like, that's the difference. You know, I look in the mirror every day and I go, girl, you are a hard 7 out of 10. I already know I'm a 10 out of 10. I'm trying to be humble by telling myself 7 out of 10. That's just me boosting up to put a smile on to go about my day. I got like an entire gremlin, like the female gremlin. You know what we'll talk about? Like, yeah, I like that 75% of the time, okay? And on a bad day, and we all know it's a 10 out of 10. Believe that about yourself. My issue when it came to self-confidence, because it was never that I was not confident. My issue is that I don't respect men. I used to treat men like shit. Because trauma was not like a bad relationship or a bad experience. It was a literal event that happened. Just completely changed the course of my mind and my life. But kind of led me down the hodom. Led me on the path to be a hoe, which is a good thing, but I get men like toys. It's kind of growing from that and healing from that and me deciding that not all men are trash, just some of them. If you're down there, if you're like getting out there in the world, you got to start with yourself. Sit down with a piece of paper, write what you like, what it could be sexual, could be anything. Right now, you don't. Because if you figure yourself out, nobody's going to be able to.
So I want to touch on the men are trash thing, because I see that mentioned a lot on social media, and it's a very, very broad general statement that they're making, like almost feeling as though encapsulating all men. And I feel as though that really bothers me, because like, if it seems to be encapsulating all men, you're going to take a little bit of offense to that, knowing who you are as a person. And the fact that I see a lot of videos online of like women saying like, oh, men are trash, or this type of man is trash. I like this type better. I'm just like,
it's literally.
Let me finish. Go ahead. I wonder if, going back to what you said, if do they know what they want, or do they think they know what they want? You shake your head no. And that's pretty much exactly what I thought as well. Do they even know what they want?
It is literally the same thing that I bitched at CA at the beginning of the show. It is a generalization. It is, do I take offense to the fact that she says that that army guys have no stroke game? Absolutely. I'm fantastic. But Do I know that the majority of army guys are fucking shit in the bed from what I've heard? Abso-fucking-lutely. Do I know that the Marines get some really, really great raps for being great in bed, even though I know that most of them are monkeys who drag their fists across the ground? Absolutely. But that doesn't change the fact that those are generalizations. There are a large majority of men who are fucking dicks and cocksuckers and don't understand what the term monogamy means. But there are also a large majority of men that do understand that stuff, that do have emotions, but then get their hearts and shit stomped on and broken down and then become cocksuckers. That absolutely is a path that happens to people.
From a perspective like you just said, these men who are monogamous and who are good men, treated like trash by women, and they become toxic in return. Because they didn't set boundaries for themselves. Myself to be treated like that. I wouldn't allow somebody to break me down so bad that I stop being the good person that I am, and I now treat other people like trash. Can do that. I have boundaries, you know, and self-respect. But, you know, men is a little bit different when it comes to women because of statuses or whatever. But in manipulative and vindictive nature, that shit down, okay? All women fall into it because they're used to or accustomed to holding firm to things like that. Allow that shit. Allow it, it won't exist. You can't allow somebody to change who you are as a person. It shouldn't be a thing. That's the problem. It becomes like a literal circus. The dating scene is a circus. Like, the pool is literally just consists of the shallow end and four kids already peed in it. So, you know, like, it's bad. To the point where I don't even think dating exists anymore. It's literally just talking stages followed by either ghosting, which is very toxic, or you're in a situationship, but nobody knows about it because it's not on social media because or both of you have significant others or a roster. Oh,
I have run into the former a lot. I have run into those types of women a lot. And quite frankly, it kind of pisses me off. I'm not going to lie.
What do you mean?
No, not the roster. I mean, like, when you mentioned, like, the whole talking stage and then ghosting part. That's what I mean by the former. So, like, I run into that a lot. And I'm someone that, when I meet someone new, I like having conversations. I like getting to know them. And I do eventually, like, you know, after a couple of days, I eventually want to make plans to meet up because I'm not going to fucking sit and text you forever, you know? And then when I try and get to that point, it's always nothing.
It's called stonewalling.
Yeah, it's bullshit. I hate it.
You do realize that that really doesn't have anything to do with you, right? A lot of the time, it's nothing to do with the person being ghosted.
You know what? I'm glad you said that, because for a long time I thought it did have something to do with me. I'm glad you said that, because I thought it had something to do with me for a long time. So thank you.
And let's also be honest, on most of those social media apps, at least from my experience, they suck.
Most
so
of them
so fucking them hard. I would much rather go to like a club with a dance floor or a BDSM event or any one of these like massive kink ideas. Those are places I'd much rather go to pick someone up. And as much as I hate to admit it, I even suggest the strip club over a yep.
As far as dating or a partner relationship.
Oh no, I'm not talking about like a long-term relationship. I'm talking about like single night of like, hey, how you doing? I don't know why I enjoy talking to strippers. I think that they are some of the most entertaining human beings on the face of the goddamn earth.
Great. I love talking to strippers. I love hanging out with strippers and friends of strippers. I strip half the time too, so you know what? But I was talking about because you were comparing it to like a dating app.
Like I said, I'd rather take the strip club than Tinder.
I don't have any dating apps, so I have a Tinder, and what I do is I post my comedy flyers on there and my podcast stuff. And it's all free advertising. So thank you. Pro tip. I don't actually use them for dating. Well, for me, I really, first of all, I don't date. I'm a hoe. Let's write that down. But I also have borderline personality disorder. So I go from absolute no interest at all to completely obsessed that my day stops and starts with what the hell is this person doing that I just started talking to. And if I do get ghosted or something, then it's psychological, emotional damage, but like painful damage, like real pain. Can't do that. So I keep my roster, and we are very, haven't been engraved. They've been for a while. Very swapped with the roster. Who wants to sign NDAs and get all that shit done again? Nobody.
Yeah. That is. So I do gotta ask, how deep is your roster?
Like how many people?
Yes, because I have been non-monogamous for a while. I have a roster of one currently, and I don't have, and I'm working to expand that, but that takes time. That takes going out and meeting people and doing stuff and having that time and availability to go out and do that stuff.
Well, to start, if it's one, it's a fuck buddy. Roster. More than one player on the team, buddy.
Understood. Got it.
You're roasted. Goddamn.
Got it.
Two or more is a roster. Mine, I have four people, two men, two women on the roster. They all have a specific job. Mind you, it's not like I hit these people up all the time. Even when I was in relationships, I still had my roster. But I'm not a cheater. You know what I mean? I wasn't like hitting them up on the side. They just knew. When or if that relationship ended, your answer within 15 minutes when I text you. That's it. Kind of like an unspoken, lifelong agreement. But recently this year, actually, one of the original roster members pretty devastated about that.
I heard that on one of your podcasts. I apologize for that.
Me too.
Yeah. So, I guess then, what's the largest your roster has ever been, then? Have you ever gone over that four number?
I have like five, maybe. Then like a five alternate, let's say. Like a maybe, you know, it's got like might get tryouts if this one fucks up kind of thing, but it's just the standard four. It hasn't always been the same four. It really lasts for a long period of time. It's not like open season, you know, I change every season. It's the same people unless something happens, which is usually them fucking up cutthroat with my roster.
So are there like expectations that they have to meet to be on your roster? I'm curious.
Oh, process to getting on the roster. First of all, there has an agreement. There's paperwork. I literally write, it's the same thing with a BDSM style relationship. It's what people don't teach each other and what I did teach in my BDSM episodes for the podcast. If you want to know more about BDSM, please go watch those episodes.
Have a motherfucking contract. We preach that all the time here, god damn it.
Amen.
Amen. It's an expectation. The kinks are not. These yellow red light line, they same thing, what they expect out of it, this is what I expect out of it, these are my requirements, this is what your job is, yes or no, sign or don't, and get out. You know, but I also take it further with the NDAs. Don't kiss and tell. I got some fire ass nudes, but you also might be seeing my face on TV soon, so I need to keep that shit on the wrap, so I have people sign NDAs. Do not hear anything I send to you. I also tend to get a little crazy sometimes. So, also don't share that shit. You know, because basically it's not just for nudes you get an NDA. It's to keep the entire situation private. I'm not friends with anybody in my roster. I don't social media. I do not give a fuck about how you're feeling. We are not friends. Don't me. If I text you, you text me, we schedule. Bang, a high five, pat on the ass, good job, champ, and I'll see you on the next one. That's literally it.
Wow.
That is...
I don't know.
That is hysterical for me to hear. Because the person that I have is very much the polar opposite of you. Wants to know what I'm doing all the goddamn time. Yeah, it's... Huh.
Literally removed someone from the roster for asking me how my day went.
Oh my god.
So cut throat with it. Do not speak to me, we are not friends. Because I have to be that way for me. And it doesn't mean everybody has to be that way. I have borderline. You give me way too much attention now, I'm way too invested in what you're doing. And I actually give a fuck. Oh, you know, because the people on my roster, I have no intention of dating them. I don't usually have sex with people that I respect when it comes to men. If you're on my roster, it's usually a bad thing. You know? I'm a shot in hell, you know, of anything else.
God damn. Anyway,
so, yeah. I know exactly what I want. Most of aspects of my life. Very fine-tuned with how I operate.
Understood.
Exactly what I want out of life. And I'll get it.
I respect the hell out of you for that. In all honesty. I'm at a loss for words. I don't think I've... Respectfully, you are a boss-ass bitch.
So, bad bitch, big dick energy.
That's the most big dick energy I've seen in a female ever. I mean that wholeheartedly. I actually, you know what? Now I'm thinking about that. Because I listened to the Alpha Submissive episode that you put out a while back ago. So, could you kind of go into that a little bit? Because I've never heard the term until I listened to that episode. So I would love for you to elaborate a little bit on it on this episode, if you have time to.
Yeah, I'll make it brief. So if you're in the BDSM community, An alpha submissive in the BDSM world is literally just a slave. That's usually a household that's full of slaves with one above the rest that can give a little bit more direction, but at the end of the day, you're still a slave. That's an alpha submissive in that realm. Modern, it's more damaged women. We need to have a sense of control of all things at all times. A lot of the reason that people use BDSM as a form of therapy when it comes to sex, who have been through sexual assault or sex trafficking, things like that, they usually, oddly enough, go into a submissive role. Why? Because they don't want the power. They want the control. They want to know, as soon as that hand goes up, completely back in control of everything. Submissives have control of a BDSM relationship. Submissives have control, and an alpha submissive is the same way. I am not a submissive person. Obviously, I am very aggressive. My aura is threatening, okay? But I am a switch, which is a, you know, another way of expressing that you're an alpha submissive too. Most of them are switches. You can go submissive or dominant. I'm very dominant in my day-to-day life. I'm head of household. I maintain everything for myself, for finances, everything. My friend group, I'm usually the leader of the pack. You know, when it comes to organizing things, I'm going to do it so that it's done right. You know, I'm very in that head leadership position at all times. Do an alpha submissive and be submissive for the person. It's very rare that happens. It means you're giving up some level of and power.
I very much agree with that sentiment and very much understand exactly where you're coming from as somebody who is a switch and has not bottomed for anybody in
25,600 minutes?
No, longer. It's, I want to say 4 years now since the last time I've actually bottomed in an actual, like, scene. But yeah, no, I kind of on the same level as you in which there is a lot of trauma in my past, and both sexually and emotionally, for me at least. And I'm a top primarily because of the fact that I don't want to give up that power dynamic. And there are so very, very few people that I can actually bottom to and be comfortable bottoming, even though that I know personally that that is something that I mentally need.
You just won't enjoy it. You can do it. You're just not getting out of it what you're intending to get out of it. When you're in play mode, as I like to call it, because I call sex play, I have no romantic attachment to sex, like, at all. It is literally just play for me. That's also why I live my life the way I do. But, you know, play situations, it's raw and it's very vulnerable. That's what people don't realize. Not just taking off your clothes and humping each other. You're literally, everything is kind of laid bare in that situation, especially when you get into power dynamics. When you get into kinks and fetishes and things like that, you're really opening your soul up to somebody when you have sex with them. So it is really hard when you're traumatized in any kind of way. Open yourself up that way. There's so many jokes right there. I'm sorry. You know, just because of the way I said that, but I'm trying not to make a joke out of it because it is actually very serious. It is a very, very fragile situation when you have sex with someone, anyone. It doesn't matter who it is. So, alpha submissive is kind of hard when you come from either a history of sexual abuse or sexual assault, just kind of trauma relating to your body. Hard to give up or control to somebody because you get triggered whether or not you want to or whether you trust that person. Yeah, I made my point with that. I don't know, sidetracked in my head. Said naked and then my brain went naked stuff. Oh, come on.
Oh, man.
All right. So that is all the time that we have for this week's episode of 69 Whiskey. Thank you, CA, for joining us. Now, Mish, do the fucking housekeeping.
Yeah, I have to fucking reclaim my throne after you butchered my spiel last week. God damn. Anyway, ladies and yeah, that's for you. I just love how Zach and Josh were clowning you all last week during that time. That was the most entertaining part of that spiel. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, episode 85, 69 Whiskey. Thank you for joining us. Before I get into all my spiel, Christiane, would you like to promote anything that you have going on? I know you talked about the comedy show next month. Anything else you'd like to? Your podcast, your social medias, if you have any.
Well, you can find me on any social media under C.A. Knubel, and you can always join me every Thursday night at 8:30 for my Ho on a Go podcast, so I can teach you how to please and be pleasing your sexual and self-empowerment.
What? Fuck yeah. And where you can find the 69 Whiskey Podcast, you can find us on a multitude of different podcasting platforms, including, but not limited to, Apple, Spotify, Google, TuneIn, Podchaser, and so many more. And of course, we always, always, always encourage feedback for the show. I have a couple of 5-star reviews I'd like to get to. Yes, thank you, studio audience. First and foremost, my homie, Matty Ice Frates, he gave us a 5-star review on Spotify, and he said to us in a tweet, "Your trip to the convention," meaning Exotica, "was well worth the rating." So I'm glad that people enjoyed the Exotica episode so much, they're leaving 5-star reviews wherever they go. We also had some 5-star reviews on Good Pods. Shout out to Mick Manhattan, Dave Graham, and my homie from Whiskey Hell Pod, Steve McShane. And I can't forget the lovely affiliates of this show. Join the Ball Sex Revolution. Check out the Baldo and create great audiograms for your podcast. Please check out Wave as well. You can also find our show on Full Swap Radio, Thursdays at 6:30 a.m. and Saturdays at 10 p.m. Those times are Central Standard Time. As for the socials, Twitter, 69 Whiskey Pod. Instagram, 69 Whiskey Podcast. TikTok, 69 Whiskey Podcast. Facebook, the letters RU 69 Whiskey. And for the Twitch and YouTube, which we barely ever use for some strange reason, you can always search up 69 Whiskey as well.
Thank you, Mish, for tolerating my asinine nature while you go through your spiel.
You know, you really poorly timed some of those in the middle of me speaking. You do realize that, right?
I'm fine with it. It brings the joy back to my heart when it goes horribly fucking wrong, and at least, like, we're doing it together.
I'll fix it in post. It's all good.
Alright, thank you everybody for tuning in to the 69 Whiskey Podcast. Thank you, CA, for joining us. It was a pleasure having you on. Would love to have you come back on. Would love to come and see your show in December.
I'd like to be a guest on your show one day. Your show sounds like a good time.
Anytime.
But you guys have a fantastic evening. Have a good one. Bye-bye.